Welcome to Tastes of the Tropics. And now, here are your hosts, Gretchen Schmidt and Christina Favretto.
Welcome to Tastes of the Tropics. My name is Gretchen Schmidt from Edible South Florida Magazine.
I'm Christina Favretto, food lover and culinary historian.
And we're here at the Miami Book Fair today with Anna Thomas, author of the new Vegan, Vegetarian, Omnivore, Dinner for Everyone at the Table. Welcome to South Florida.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
And we understand that you haven't spent a lot of time here.
No, I've been to Miami once before when I spent several wonderful days, saw a lot of art, and was promoting my book Love Soup a few years ago. Had a lovely event at Books and Books. And now I'm back for the book fair. I've never been here for the book fair before. It's fantastic, I have to say.
It's a little crazy, but it's fantastic.
It's one of our favorite events. There was an event here 2 weeks ago, and it's only the third year they've done it, called the Seed Food and Wine, and it's a plant-based festival. Mm-hmm. We've been involved in it, you know, first year was pretty good, second year, last year was great, this year even bigger and better than before. So I saw that by the people who went there, they weren't all vegans, they weren't all vegetarians. The people we saw just covered a broad swath of folks. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were, you know, I wonder by the popularity, this is no longer just a fad or something. People are really seem to be eating more plant-based foods.
Yes, I think people are. And I think that a lot of things are changing about the way we eat. But I'd like to point out something. Plant-based food, basically, is the food everybody eats. I mean, when you go to a picnic and you eat the watermelon, you know, you're not eating the vegan watermelon. You're just eating the watermelon and everybody's eating it. When you go to the bar and you have your margarita or your mojito and you're having guacamole and chips, it's not the vegan guacamole. It's just the guacamole, you know? I mean, there's just a million things like that because there's so much plant-based food. So it's not that plant-based food is the food that only these people eat and the other people are only eating meat. It doesn't work that way. Everybody's eating the salad, everybody's eating the minestrone soup, everybody's eating the ratatouille, and then some people, you know, still the larger proportion, are also eating fish and meat and dairy products and other things. So it's a mix. And what's changing is that I think that the number of people who are eating less meat or none at all is shifting. But everybody has always eaten all that other food. Mm-hmm. Everybody's always eaten the watermelon and the guacamole and everything else like that. Uh-huh.
And what you're saying now is demystifying some of the preconceptions we have about veganism and vegetable-based diets, but also your recipes demystify a bit because they're simple, but they bring out the best in each of the vegetables that they discuss.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's what I try to do. I have never been interested in food that is trying to imitate something else. I think there's a place for all of these meat analogs that are marketed, and they're a convenience food for a lot of people, and that's fine. I'm not, you know, throwing shade on anything, as my kids would say, but it's just something that's never interested me. I've always been interested in taking the foods that I love and doing the thing that makes them the best, making something the best version of itself, not having it try to be something else that it's not. So that's just my personal style. That's how I cook.
We are 1 week before, or a few days before Thanksgiving as we're talking with you. And what makes your cookbook to me so practical is as families get together, traditionally there's always been, you know, my niece coming home from school and she's the vegan, and Thanksgiving for us is a real traditional. Every other holiday in our family is we'll do what we please, but not Thanksgiving. We can't deviate. People get angry.
Yes.
So, you know.
I know. You know, tradition is very important, and ritual is very important. I mean, I come from an immigrant family, so I grew up with very intensely, deeply felt sense of tradition and ritual, because when you lose everything else, these people came after the war, you know, they were displaced persons, the generation behind me, my parents and aunts and uncles. They lost everything. then your traditions are really precious, because yes. that's what you have that you bring with you. And we used to have these big Christmas Eve dinners, and I wrote a whole essay in this book about that and what it was like and how that Christmas Eve has sort of moved forward in time with me and changed based on who became part of my group that was always there and how people were eating, but it still kept the roots of that tradition. It's very important, and Thanksgiving is a lightning rod for this kind of thing for everybody. It just is this point when it all comes together and people feel this pressure to really pay homage to these traditions, but people do eat differently. So many years ago, and it was one of the seeds of this book, I did a menu called Thanksgiving for Everyone. And I published that menu in the New Vegetarian Epicure. Gosh, it must be like 20 years ago now. And I took some heat for that, I'll tell you, because I'd always written strictly vegetarian cookbooks. Uh-huh. And suddenly there was a menu where I was discussing the fact that my husband would roast spit roast a turkey. Mm-hmm. But it's a beautiful menu. And I'm going to just open the book up here to that page if I can find it real fast and tell you a couple of the things that put together. Okay, here we go. So this is Thanksgiving for Everyone, and it is designed to be a meal that vegetarians can very happily eat, and you can also do it in a completely, you know, you can do a vegan version of most of these dishes. There's a polenta torta that's made with roasted squash and onion marmalade.
Wow.
It is delicious and beautiful, and you cut it in wedges. And I serve that with roasted cipollini and green beans and sautéed kale with garlic, one of my favorite things, super easy, and other different kinds of vegetables, any kind of like wonderful roasted vegetables that you love. And then we have a salad, a very light kind of refreshing sort of salad. We have a casserole of roasted yams with green chilies because I live in California.
Thank you. No marshmallows.
Cranberry sauce with oranges and wine and things like that. So everything sort of is, you can have a beautiful vegetarian meal of a big wedge of this polenta torta surrounded by different vegetables. But all of this also goes really well with a roasted turkey, and I have a recipe in this book for a very good roasted turkey that's simple to do, stuffed with herbs. You do the stuffing separately in casseroles so that you can have that for everybody too. Uh-huh. And it's a meal that everybody can sit down and enjoy together. Nobody's picking around the edges of their plate to find something to eat. Mm-hmm. At the same time, nobody's being made to feel weird or guilty or sidelined because they want turkey. Everybody's welcome, because this is really about hospitality, and it's about all of us being able to sit down at the table together.
And that's what Thanksgiving is about. And being a first generation also from displaced persons, I know that Thanksgiving was unusual for them, but they took to it, and they added their own Northern Italian traditions.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Everybody has this sort of traditional Thanksgiving dinner plus.
Yeah.
My husband's Basque family, it was plus garbanzo beans.
Oh, okay.
Plus polenta, let me tell you, that is appealing.
For you, plus polenta, you're going to love this. You're going to love this polenta torta,
predict.
And, you know, I think that it's not just at Thanksgiving. I think it's super important all the time. And that's why I wanted to write this book, because if we lose our ability to sit down and eat together and share food, to sit down and have dinner together, then where are we, you know? And we're eating differently, and not everybody's eating quite, you know, the same way, and people are in different places on that big curve of change. And some people don't want to change at all, and that's fine too. People are going to eat how they want to eat. But the important thing is that we shouldn't break up into food tribes and be having a war, you know?
Bad.
We really need to be able to sit down together and have dinner. And that's why I wrote this book.
You know, recently someone asked me why these simple potatoes that I made tasted so very delicious. And I said, well, I just put olive oil and dill. And this person had never had fresh dill. So in your book, you highlight herbs. And you just, the importance of something as basic and simple as herbs. So tell us a little bit about your relationship to herbs and how you bring them to the fore.
Well, my relationship to herbs has to do with my larger relationship to all sorts of things that just have real flavor and taste fresh and lively and wonderful and distinct. And I love chilies. I love herbs. I love garlic. I love all kinds of things that have, I love pomegranate molasses. Yeah. I love all sorts of things. I love mixtures of spices like harissa. These are things that I use a lot. And I tell people, don't be afraid of flavor, because flavor is exciting and wonderful and makes you feel alive when you have it. So yes, I use a lot of fresh herbs. And luckily, I live in California, where fresh herbs are available all the time. And I think you're probably in the same situation here in Miami.
Except in the summer heat, yeah. But this is our growing season kicks in right now. And there are things that certainly do grow year-round here.
You know, you probably get things that are grown in greenhouses that are kept cool, just like we have things in the winter that are grown in greenhouses that are kept warm.
Yes, so that's right. No,
that's a very bizarre thing for me to think about. But I think that probably you can get parsley and cilantro and things like that.
Look at the rosemary you get in California that grew all over the place.
True.
Even in the middle of L.A.
I know. Hedges.
Yeah. Brush up against it for a little perfume, right?
Yeah. But I love to use fresh herbs. And in fact, one of the things that I'm going to be serving when I do my demonstration this afternoon in the kitchen stadium here is going to be mojo verde, which is just like a whole pile of wonderful herbs and garlic and chilies all put into the cuisine art together and made into a thing that looks like pesto but doesn't taste like pesto.
Now mojo is that's something part of the Cuban cuisine here that we can kind of claim. Tell us what your mojo is
like. Well, this mojo verde is descended from the Spanish kind of green sauces that they make in the Canary Islands in southern Spain. So they probably are very similar roots in all of this. And basically, in that part of Spain, when you say mojo, it's kind of like saying salsa in California, or, you know, I mean, it's a category of thing, and there's a million different varieties of it, and this is mine. This is my version of the green one, and it's got parsley, cilantro, mint, serrano chili, garlic, and olive oil, and red wine vinegar, not lemon juice, vinegar, and a little
sour orange is, I think, the ingredient that we use here.
Sour orange.
Sour orange, right?
Fantastic. Yeah, mine has you can see the relationship in it with gazpacho, because it's the olive oil, vinegar, and a little tiny bit of bread that's ground
the pesto
up
part
into
of it.
That's kind of a Basque thing too, isn't it? Though, to put some bread.
Well, it's
in
a very Spanish thing.
Yeah.
It's across Spain. You really find that across Spain, the use of bread in a lot of things, and just a little bit of it, but it gives it a certain kind of body that's nice.
The pomegranate molasses you mentioned is a favorite that I've seen in the last couple of years, because that is one of those ingredients that really makes things pop.
Great.
Tell us some other finds that you've been cooking with or enjoying lately.
Well, everybody has certain favorite spices that they use, right? I am a maniac for cumin seeds. I love cumin seeds. And I buy them by the sack, by the bag. And I don't buy ground cumin. I buy cumin seeds. I toast them lightly in a pan for a few moments, and then I grind them up by hand in my molcajete, my big, volcanic stone mortar that I hauled back from some Mexican market. And it takes about a minute to do that. It doesn't take very long. And that freshly toasted cumin is so wonderful. I also love, I keep a jar of dried chile de árbol pods. They're little red chilies. They look like they'd be a lot hotter than they are. They're hot, but they're not like amazingly hot. They won't take the roof of your mouth off.
Right.
And I drop those into a soup that's simmering or into onions that I'm sauteing.
Yeah.
And then when I'm done, it's like a bay leaf. Then I pull it out, And it just adds a little beautiful flavor and warmth to the dish. And then like everybody, really good olive oil, some good vinegars, a good balsamic vinegar. These are basics that you have to have on hand. you know.
And I like that you're really, you've so demystified even the cumin. It's that I just want to go home and try it myself.
There's nothing to it.
Nothing to it.
And actually, I also like to use whole cumin seeds. Mm-hmm. I have a wonderful, really easy carrot salad. Mm-hmm. Grate up the carrots. Yeah. Put some lemon juice and olive oil on them, a whole bunch of chopped cilantro, and then whole toasted cumin seeds. And it's the most delicious kind of crunchy, kind of, you know, refreshing.
A little sweet, a little
sort of
fresh.
A little bit sweet, yeah. A little bit fresh, yeah, you know. And very, very easy. And then you get that surprise of biting into a cumin seed, and it's wonderful.
Lovely flavor, yeah. And I could imagine you could even sprinkle it on vanilla ice cream, and it would be good.
Oh, what a great idea. You know, I like that. I like combining things in surprising combinations. Last night at this special event that I did at the Culinary Institute, as part of the dessert, we had one of the recipes here, which is a pear and rosemary sorbet. And so it's a pear sorbet with a little bit of rosemary in it, and it's just that little bit of rosemary that sort of like underlines the sweetness of the pears. And it's wonderful. I also like to make a peach and basil sorbet, which is delicious.
Fantastic.
And you might not think, you think basil tomatoes, right? But it's great with peaches.
sure. And that technique of toasting spices, Indian cuisine does that so nicely.
All the time.
And it alters it too. I mean, when you toast it, it gives it a whole other dimension that you might want or you might not want.
Yeah, just like lightly toasted nuts suddenly have a completely different quality and flavor. Yeah.
So what about parsley? My mother always said, parsley's good in everything except coffee. And I would say, what about ice cream? And she'd say, I'm sure. And someone recently made, for my birthday, they made me parsley ice cream. And
it was
delicious.
Oh,
it was fresh and delicious.
That is so
interesting. Had a kind of a spicy bite. So,
I would have to try that. I don't know about that.
I would get my friend to make you some parsley ice cream, Gretchen. But so what are your unusual ways to use parsley, for example?
Well, I'll tell you something. I make, as you know, green soup is one of these cult things with the last book that really became a thing. And I make lots of different versions of green soup. And one of them is really a parsley and potato soup. And so I use it, but I use parsley a lot in, parsley's a major component in mojo verde. And I use parsley in so many salads. And of course, you know, tabbouleh, which is basically made of parsley. And I have a whole section in the salad chapter here in Vegan Vegetarian Omnivore that's called Tabbouleh Variations. And it starts with, you know, parsley and bulgur, and then goes in a lot of different directions from there. And so, you know, I really can relate to parsley as being more than just a little sprinkle of something to look pretty on top. It can be a major component in salads. And I have a salad, one of my favorite salads is a wonderful winter salad. When we start to not really get those fresh, tender little lettuces and things that are good in the summer, I'm seeing if I can look it up for you here. But it is a parsley and radish salad. Here's a picture of it that unfortunately cannot be seen on the podcast, but made with that big Italian flat leaf parsley and a lot of it, and then sliced radishes, and then a few other things for contrast, like some thinly sliced celery, some capers, some walnuts. And this is like one of the best, a little bit of radicchio for color. It is one of the best winter salads. I love this.
And that's perfect for us, because that's exactly the stuff that's going to be coming into season.
Absolutely. And that's always good.
Right. Our radishes are coming into season.
Squeeze of orange.
You can add a squeeze of orange, and this is actually made with a dressing that I really like that's just lemon juice, olive oil, and a little tiny bit of agave nectar. Because I like to use a lot of lemon, and then I like to balance that acidity with a tiny touch of agave
nectar. And it actually brings out the acidity in a great way.
It does. It does, yeah.
Well, this is an example of all of your wonderfully simple, practical, and flavorful recipes. It's been great talking to you. We could sit here for hours and talk about these recipes, but I'm afraid our time is up here. Well, Anna Thomas, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, we love talking to you about this, and her book is called Vegan Vegetarian Omnivore, Dinner for Everyone at the Table. It's so practical. It's so sensible. It covers everything here.
Everybody, get this book.
Yes,
we love it.
And a beautiful
Thank
photography.
Thank you. I vote for that.
You've been listening to Tastes of the Tropics on Edible Radio. This is Gretchen Schmidt from Edible South Florida.
Christina Favretto from Food Lovin'.
Listen for more food and drink conversations on our future podcasts. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to Tastes of the Tropics with Gretchen Schmidt and Christina Favretto on Edible Radio. For more information or to listen to archives, visit ediblefeast.com. This podcast is a production of Edible Radio, all rights reserved.